All right, we should be live in just a second here, so I will jump right in. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday, and you know what that means. I'm back with the beautiful and talented Dana Morningstar for our weekly stream. Now, as you might, oh, hold on, I'm hearing myself. There we go. As you might recall, Dana and I do this once every week, and we alternate weeks. So this week we're on my channel, and next week we'll be over on her channel, Thrive After Abuse. So please make sure you're subscribed to both. And if you don't already know Dana, definitely check her out. She's at thriveafterabuse.com, Thrive After Abuse on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere you can find her, she's out there, right? Welcome back, Dana.
Good deal. Hi, Angie. Thank you for having me.
Always my pleasure. Always my pleasure. So Dana and I were going to start out today. Hey, James. Hey, Alcudia, babe. Hey, Zora, Elizabeth. Hey, Carl. Okay, I'm going to stop, Carla. We are here to, well, as usual, to support you, but we have this great topic today. Dana got a question that I thought was amazing from one of her followers. Dana, would you mind sharing it?
Yes. Okay. So this comes from Cheryl, and it's in the YouTube comments here. She says, this is in response to one of my weekly live streams. She says, "So no one here has ever yelled at someone in anger and frustration at being ill-treated? I find that hard to believe. And to not vent a true emotion is not healthy, in my opinion." And I'm guessing that she is referring to, we talk frequently about how it's okay for a person to be frustrated and angry, but it's not okay for them to treat another person like a verbal or emotional punching bag.
Right. And I think on that token, like we kind of talked about a little bit, every one of us has probably blown up at a narcissist at one time or another in our lives. But I think what's important, and well, actually, Dana, you said it really well. Why don't you said something before we started streaming about how narcissists, I mean, how we obviously have emotions and should express them. But what did you say? Something about we shouldn't be. I can't remember how you put it.
Well, basically that we have to be able to distance ourselves so we're able to be responsive instead of reactive.
Yes.
And this is a lot of stuff, you know, once I think so many of us, when we're in these dynamics, whether it's with a parent, a coworker, a significant other, whoever it is, if we're not aware that somebody's actively pushing our buttons or trying to bait us into an argument, or if we're not aware that we're being manipulated or what's going on, it's so easy and understandable to get to slip into just being reactive like that and to fire back. But these dynamics can escalate very quickly. And I think responding or reacting to anybody when we're angry, it doesn't end well. We either say things that we regret and it can end friendships or there's certain things you just can't unsay, and apologies don't cut it. And it's just acting out of anger is impulsivity gone wrong, basically.
Right. With that being said, I want to say this. I think I don't want anyone to think we're criticizing you if you are in a situation right now where you're acting out of anger sometimes, because that's human. And but what happens is as we evolve as humans, as we evolve as people, we can begin to, well, what I've learned, and I think Dana's obviously learned this as well, is that number one, we must have empathy for other people in our lives. And if we get the toxic people out of our lives, we'll have much less of a chance to actively feel angry for no, for simple things. But also, I've learned that feeling angry is so hurtful on my body and my soul that and my psychological, wellness that I can't live in that place. I must release it if I have a great deal of anger and I can't use it for anything. But I don't release it in that way anymore. I don't let it out on someone. And at least not most of the time. Every now and then I might snap at somebody, but it's rare. I'm being honest. But it's rare. Like there are a couple times a month I'm pretty testy, touchy. I might cry a little bit. Might be a little snappy if somebody asks me something when I'm busy, but 99% of the time I try to keep a pretty even keel. And I think that's for me been the most helpful way to exist, the best way, the way I feel less the least amount of physical pain and the least amount of anguish in my head. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I found this, I got to just say this, Dana, I'm so sorry. I found this, this folder full of poems that I wrote when I was a teenager. And it was so fascinating because to see the emotional growth, one of the things I said in the poems, one of the poems was, you know, you say that happiness is, you're in charge of your own happiness. Well, that's obviously not true or something like that. And as I've grown up and recognized the power that I do have as an individual, that has made a huge amount of difference in my own ability to be happy. Anyway, I might have got a little off topic, but that just reminded me. I was thinking of doing a video on that at some point. Anyway, what are you thinking? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, what you're saying about kind of reclaiming your power. Whereas before it was like, okay, we're in control of our happiness. But if we feel like we're not, that other people are in control of our happiness and we're kind of walking on eggshells trying to maintain that happiness.
Yeah.
This is a big mindset shift that so many of us have to make when we are recovering from narcissistic abuse is we've got to break free of these old ways that we used to interact with people, which used to be either coping or hoping.
Yeah.
And really, because man, I get it. These people will push your buttons to no end. And I think most people are like, oh my God, I've never experienced anger like this before. I have never like physically like, you know, shoved or hit or done anything. And I'm getting pushed to that point. I don't know who I am.
Yeah.
And, but it doesn't really cross their mind of, okay, then I either need to be assertive and because the reason we tend to get pushed so far, it's all of this crazy making behavior.
Yes.
Like, it's like arguing with the brick wall. They shut down, they give silent treatment, they blame shift. They, you know, it's all of this. That's why we get so infuriated because there's no resolution to something. And so all of that anger continues to build and grow. And, you know, and then if we're not aware of why we're feeling that way, then this stuff just starts to kind of seep out of every pore and it might take a few different turns where it comes out as depression. It comes out as anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out in forms of addictions. Yeah. And this is kind of the root cause is this inability to basically for them to effectively communicate and for us to actually be able to see that we're in a relationship or some dynamic with a person who's not trying to reach a solution.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And I think another thing that I'm just sitting here as you were talking and I was remembering how furious I used to get at my ex-husband
mm-hmm.
because he would be so thick and so like he would act like he didn't know what I was talking about, for example.
Yeah.
And I know right now this moment that he knew and I knew then that he knew and it would just he would play dumb or he would, you know, when he was in trouble or he would just shut down, whatever. I remember feeling so shockingly angry, you know, like I had mm-hmm. never felt before. And I even felt the urge, I never did, but I felt the urge to physically attack him.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not in my nature, you know? And so I never did. I would never, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm just not that girl. I'd probably get beaten worse if I did, obviously. But it was one of those things that I remember. And so I can relate to your commenter as well as to people here. I mean, it's such a growth process, a growth mindset even like that you need to adopt. But when you get to that place where those people can't make you that angry, or it's really hard to make you that angry.
Yeah. I think once you see it for what it is, it makes everything starts making so much sense and you're able to more effectively detach from it.
Great point. Yeah.
But I think moving forward after, like you said, you know, when you start getting a lot of these crazy makers out of your life, these crazy making situations become few and far between. And we have to learn a different way of interacting with, you know, normal, reasonable people. Like if we're frustrated and angry at something they did, then realizing, okay, the way that we interacted with this crazy maker, that needs to be an exception, not the norm. And so we have to learn some different skills about how to effectively communicate with other people and realize, okay, if I, you know, yelling at another person, this, it just kind of ineffective communication begets ineffective communication, and it just snowballs. Yeah. So we've got to be able to kind of take a step back, gather our thoughts, approach them in an assertive, kind of solutions-oriented way, and hopefully work towards some sort of resolution. But they have to be a willing participant, and they have to be wanting to work towards a resolution as well. And if that's not there, then there comes a point where we have to then kind of possibly kind of re-navigate that relationship of, okay, I'm trying to be solutions oriented. They're not, I'm really getting frustrated. This isn't working for me as it stands. Now what needs to happen?
Right.
And maybe we need to change our expectations. Maybe, you know, this relationship just can't move past a certain point. Maybe we need to adjust our approach. Like, there's all different kind of, you know, things that we can do at that point.
Yeah. And something else that you said, I wanted to pull out of that, because everything you said was obviously entirely accurate. I think one important thing is that when we are able to recognize the behaviors, and that's part of why I do what I do, and I know part of why you do what you do, is because when, for me, going through recovery, when I began to recognize, okay, that's gaslighting in people in my life, this is this, this is that, that to me in my head, it minimized the behavior. And to me, it showed a limitation that person had instead of power they had over me. You know, there was a distinction in my head. So then I was able to stay calm and go, that's very interesting or whatever, you know, so that I didn't get angry, and that made a huge deal. So, yeah. You ready to go to the comments?
I sure am.
All right. You got one for us, or should I, let me see if I
can. Oh, I'm scrolling through here.
Okay.
We've got a comment from Anne who says, wow, thanks. I appreciate it. I've never even looked on a form like this. I'm really hoping this helps me heal fast. God bless you all and hang strong. Mm. Very cool. Welcome, Anne.
Welcome. Welcome. Yes. I have a question from Zora Star. Okay. And I'm assuming that she's implying that the son's girlfriend might be a toxic person, but she says, why won't my son's girlfriend let me see my son? And I just would say this to you as a mother of an adult son. Your son is the one in charge of that, I think. But if he is allowing her to control him, then I would guess he has a certain amount of codependency issues happening. I guess what I would want to know a little more about the situation before I would be able to tell you too much more than that. But Dana, what are your thoughts? Anything?
Yeah, I would agree. I think we would need to know the context behind why she doesn't want to have contact. Yeah. Is this a longstanding pattern? Has she been controlling and possessive and difficult, or was there some sort of preceding event and, you know, things have been tense between you two and now it's kind of resulted in this?
Yeah, absolutely. Hello, Courtney Skinner, by the way, and Dana Grazino and Lucky Sprite. Okay. Oh, she said she's a narcissist. She controls my son. Well, you know, the bottom line here is unfortunately that if, in fact, she's actively controlling him, the best thing that you can do is be a soft landing place for him, I think, and just let him know that you love him, that you're always there, send a birthday card, send a, you know, holiday card, whatever, but don't push too hard, because what I know for sure is that when I was in a relationship with a narcissistic man and that I had my narcissistic mother on the other side of me pulling and pulling, right? I felt overly put upon. Like, I felt like I was stuck between a rock and a hard place. There was nothing I could do. So I would say, just be careful and be gentle with it, and maybe it will pass. Dana, anything else?
Yeah. On that? And that's such a tough one. I mean, I think if you have this difficult and demanding daughter-in-law, and this is kind of a longstanding pattern, I think sometimes you almost have to kind of play the game. So if you want to be in your grandchildren's life, letting it be known, if you and your son have had this talk of, I'm concerned about the way that she treats you, but most likely there's going to have to be this level of kind of ingratiating behavior on your end in order to kind of keep the peace with her. It's not right. It's not fair. But when you have, there's very little control. There's no control really that you have over this situation. So I would say just to try to not stir the pot between them and to just be very pleasant and polite and gracious with her. You're going to have to basically walk on eggshells and be ingratiating if you're going to be in your grandchildren's lives.
Yeah. And I'm with you on that 100%. And I know I want to say this to Zora Star, that as an adult female who that would be hard. And, but it's something that I would do for my kid if I had to, I mean, but I would also try to educate him on the
on
topic.
What he, yeah.
Yeah.
On what he's really dealing with. Like, this isn't just a, oh, she's difficult because she's a woman, or she's difficult because of hormones or whatever, that there are people out there that have such problematic personalities that it's outside the realm of normal or workable.
Right.
And kind of plant that seed with him, but then I would kind of be hands off. And like I said, you know, it's so frustrating because, you know, we all, I think every person really has this kind of built-in sense of justice.
Yes.
And when we hear advice like, okay, you're going to have to, basically you're going to have to play the game. You're going to have to walk on eggshells and be ingratiating. We all get really upset by that because it's not right and it's not fair.
Right.
But this is the game. And the toolkit that we have with other normal, decent people, as far as being assertive, being communicative, this kind of give and take, this kind of team mentality does not apply when you're dealing with a kind of a pathological personality like that.
Right.
You have to kind of do what you need to do in order to get by.
Right. And when someone is, you know, you said it's his girlfriend, I assume that they're either living together or close to it. My assumption is there is a component involved that you cannot provide. That's all I'm going to say. And because of that, you have to play the game. And it's unfortunate and it's messed up, but it's what it is. And like I said, as a mother to an adult son, I would do it if I had to, but I would also try to educate him gently if I could.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that for anybody, right? In
yeah,
an abusive
absolutely.
Relationship, like if a person's in it, they're in it because they're getting some sort of need met. And when any of us are doing something that we know is problematic and we're confronted about it, and especially if we don't want to stop doing that thing that's problematic, whatever it might be, spending money, drinking alcohol, you know, hanging out with the wrong crowd, whatever it is, we don't want to be told that we're wrong because we don't want to stop doing what we're doing. Hopefully, eventually, he'll get to the place where he's had enough and he's able to detach and move on from her. But really the most effective way is by not pushing him into that corner and continually confronting him about it. It's just like what Angie was saying, you're just kind of planting seeds of, you know, you might want to look, if he's experiencing certain types of behavior, like gaslighting or triangulation or this, that, or the other, odds are he is like the rest of us, kind of lost in that fog, scrambling around, Googling her behavior, trying to figure out what's going on. And so sometimes just giving a person, just saying, hey, you know what? You might want to Google gaslighting, mm-hmm. or you might want to go on YouTube and look up narcissistic abuse, and then just leave it. You're just dropping that hint and then you're just leaving it. He'll start connecting the dots in his own time.
Truth. Absolutely. Oh, and she asked one more question. She said, if I sent videos to him, he would get angry at me. And the question mark, I assume. So maybe videos aren't the thing. Maybe you could just gently mention here and there. I mean, you can send videos, but honestly, if he's not ready to hear it, he's not going to hear it. So, all right, moving on. Yeah. You got another one for us?
No.
Okay. So I have Lucky Sprite said something that I thought was really important. She said, or he, I can't actually see the picture, and believe that your hurt feelings are real and caused by their behavior, ghosting, manipulation, et cetera, disregarding it. And well, I guess my point is this. Just because we're saying right now in this particular case, don't, you know, this is how you can handle this so you can still be around your son. That doesn't mean that we're saying you should live with being invalidated in general. So it is important to recognize that your feelings are real and legitimate, but it's also important to recognize that expressing them in a painfully negative way will make yourself and the other person, and in this case, if it's the narcissist, they're not going to hear you anyway. But if it's not a narcissist, then they're going to feel as much or more pain than you when you express yourself. So there's always a better way. That's what I wanted to.
Okay. Yeah. And she says, actually, here's another follow-up to that. Zora Star says, I say nothing. He's gotten mad and said to butt out. And so if that's the case, like I said, I would start thinking about what you could do to kind of get in their good graces.
Yeah.
And
kiss butt a little if you have to.
Yeah. I know it's not right. It's not fair, but it's these kind of threads to hang on to our loved ones that are wrapped up in this web of manipulation. It's like they're in a cult, basically. Yeah. And you kind of have we have to do whatever we can to kind of keep that communication open at all costs. And then just hope and pray that eventually they see the light and are able to distance themselves. But letting her, both, I think really both of them know, hey, you know what? I want you guys to be healthy and happy. I don't want to come between you two. And you, cause you really don't, like, he needs to make that decision on his own, or he's always going to resent
you.
What
I would do if my kid was in that situation, just going to put it out here for you. This is a little bit sneaky, but what I would do is I would become that girl's very best friend. I would be her biggest admirer. I would just, whatever she, as long as she isn't physically hurting your son, there's not a lot else you can do. And of course, be all about your son as well, but definitely give her the kind of star treatment so that she feels like, oh my God, your mom totally loves me. Right. Exactly. Yeah. If she feels like you don't like her, then she's always going to worry that you're going to try to pull them apart. So if you make it clear that you're so thrilled they're together and, you know, you buddy up to her, that might be your only option. And I know you're cringing over there hearing this, but you do what you do for your kids sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it sucks, but yeah. And like Faith says, she says, stay calm, cool, and collected, you know, and that's really the truth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Danny. You got one?
Yeah. Here's another question from AT, who says, my narcissist says he sees hallucinations. Is that typical?
No.
No. It's not. However, I will say that, is he saying that he sees hallucinations after he's been confronted with bad behavior? Because they will throw out every trick in the book to not be accountable. All of a sudden, they're hearing voices. They're seeing things. They have an addiction. God's talking to them. They're an alcoholic. They will throw out. I mean, you see this on court cases, right? A person gets charged with murder, and they throw out every single book, trick in the book, and it's sort of like they're just trying to see what sticks. So it could be, if he's truly having hallucinations, then that's going to be an ongoing thing. And that's something that I would really strongly encourage him to go get a psychiatric evaluation. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like, okay, this is just manipulative, I just busted him cheating for the 10th time, and now he's like, oh my God, hearing voices, I need help, I need you, and what's going on? I just am not myself, and I need to find God, and I need, you know what I mean? All this kind of stuff. Then it's just another level of the manipulation.
Yeah. Yeah. Claudia says, yeah, I don't recognize myself anymore. I literally went through a mental breakdown. My body took over and I couldn't breathe. It was like my body was going into convulsions and I couldn't get away, in relation to feeling frustrated, I guess, and angry about the narcissist. And I'll tell you something, I can kind of relate to that. I kind of feel like I went through a similar thing at some point, you know, where I felt overly devastated. Trying to see if I can see a good question for us here.
You got one? A follow-up from... Where does AT? No, she says, no, he says that he's seeing someone he knows in the yard, but no one's there. He isolates at home. Okay. So this sounds like there could be some mental illness at play. And in order to kind of see if that is indeed the case, or to potentially rule it out, I would very gently suggest, boy, I would just validate, boy, that must be really scary. You know, honey, I don't see anybody in the yard. How would you feel if we were to go make a doctor's appointment and see this, maybe stress is kind of causing this, and see if you can get a psychiatric evaluation, and then let them know that this is what he's telling you. And then go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. I've been seeing a lot of questions, and I can't find one right now, but I've been seeing a lot of questions today about the silent treatment. So let's just really quickly cover a little bit of that. If something that I think, and I know I'm going, I'm so sorry, I'm just like, but stop me if I go too fast or if I spit, you know.
No, nope, go for it. I love it. I love bouncing okay. all over the place. Go for it.
I bounce. Okay. So anyway, silent treatment. So that is something that I've seen. I mean, I know every one of us has experienced, but it is, I think, almost more for some of us more painful than actually hearing them scream at us. Especially if it's like a new thing they're doing, or if it's, or even on the flip side, if it's an all the time thing they do, where you just almost live in fear of it. And I'll tell you, the first time that I realized that the silent treatment wasn't such a bad thing, that was a good thing for me. But over time, it becomes painful. It's like the ultimate form of invalidation. And it feels like a punishment. And it usually is enacted as a punishment for what, standing up for yourself, having an opinion that's different than theirs, or whatever. Sometimes you don't even know why. But I think the best way to deal with it is to not personally focus on it, to not let them think it bothers you, even if it bothers you. Pretend like everything's normal. If normally you walk past them in a hallway and you say hello, do it. And if they don't respond like usual, just pretend like they didn't, keep going. And that annoys the crap out of them, but it will also stop them from the silent treatment if that's the thing that bothers you the most. That ultimately, though, it's a form of abuse. It's a form of manipulation. And it's one of those things that you have to be able to just, you know, it's a huge red flag of a toxic person. Dana, I know you have good thoughts on this. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you covered a lot of really great bases. And one thing I would add to that is a lot of survivors, when they go no contact, oftentimes feel really guilty, and they'll say, well, aren't I just giving the silent treatment? And like you said, the difference is silent treatment. It's a grooming behavior. It's designed to punish somebody and to teach them, hey, if you do this, if you confront me, if you challenge me, if you question me, if you disagree with me, if you do X, Y, or Z, I'm going to freeze you out with silence. Yeah. Versus no contact, which isn't a punishment. It's designed to be self-protective. That's the difference. So if anybody's kind of struggling with that, they're two very different things. No contact isn't designed to punish them. It's designed to keep you safe.
Yeah. Thank you for that distinction. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Like with silent treatment is, if we can just act as though we're not affected by it. Although I will say, with a caveat, I guess this kind of goes for everything that we're discussing here. If you're dealing with a person that's potentially dangerous or deadly, especially if they've ever shown any signs of physical violence whatsoever, I would really be careful about kind of asserting yourself and changing the game like this, because they can escalate quickly. But yeah, normally, I mean, if this is the dance they do, they give silent treatment for a few days and then they're fine. You can say, you know what? I really would rather us not do silent treatment. It's okay for you to be frustrated or angry with me, but I'd really appreciate it if you let me know when you plan on reopening communication. And just spelling it out for them, because some people do need some time to just chill out and gather their thoughts. But if we're talking anything more than, you know, a few hours, then that's a problem. And
in a healthy relationship, that would be communicated. You would just say, you know what, I need a minute here. I'm going to go take a break.
Yeah. Or I'm going to go for a walk, or, you know what, I'm just so mad. Can we just talk about this tomorrow? I just don't want to talk for the rest of the night. Yeah. But it's letting them know when you're going to reopen communication, so they're not twisting in the wind.
Yeah.
If they still won't give you an answer, if they're still trying to punish you with silence, you can do things like just turn on the radio. Mm-hmm. Or you get up and you go eat dinner in front of the TV, and you just, it's like treating an adult like they're a child. Okay. Like, you want to be a bratty child and have bratty behavior and you think you're going to punish me? You're wrong. So you cannot talk. You want to not talk in the car? Okay. I'm going to turn on the radio.
Yep. And if it were me, I'd be singing real loud.
Yeah. Like,
if I don't care.
Not right. Exactly.
Sorry, I play. I have a good question for us.
Okay.
I don't know if I was the last one or not, but I'm a little off today. I'm sorry.
No, you're great. You're fine.
Be Real says, as much work as I have been doing, it seems like narcissists still flock to me like bees on honey. What do I do? So I'm just going to say really quick, have your boundaries. Know the red flags. Don't let people into your inner circle if you think they're a narcissist. If you're not sure, take the time to get to know them a little bit before they come into the inner circle. Otherwise, keep them on the outer circle and then you won't have a problem. If you enforce your boundaries when they try to overstep them, they will never ever, you know, eventually they'll realize, okay, this person isn't somebody who I can manipulate. And then you're fine. Dana?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't have control over who's attracted to us. We do have control over how long we keep those people in our lives. So if they're flocking to you, and you know, even with the best of us, they can fly under our radar. And this is like Angie was saying about having boundaries and kind of moving slow and just taking time to not move total strangers into your inner circle right away. And just realizing, okay, they need to earn that spot, and they need to earn it with appropriate behavior over a prolonged period of time. And if they start acting in ways, it really kind of, I think, boils down to, we also have to be aware of when we're being mistreated. Mm. And this is a skill that I feel really takes practice, because most people that come here, they've come here because they've gotten to the point where they finally realize they're being mistreated, but they're at the point where they can no longer hang on anymore. Mm. And so it's part of our healing is we've got to back this way up to where we can catch this stuff early on, to when it's those subtle little things that kind of causes this confusion of, did they really say it? Did they really mean it? Instead of minimizing or justifying it, thinking, oh, well, it's got to be their culture. Oh, it's because they're younger or older, or they had a bad day, or they had a bad childhood, or they're stressed out. We need to quit giving excuses to bad behavior and then shift that focus, that locus of control inside of us, and realize it doesn't matter why somebody's doing what they're doing. It matters where our boundary is for how we expect to be treated.
That's right. Yeah. And on that, you know, on that same note, I got to say this. I went through a thing where I didn't know. You said it really well when you said we have to know what it is to be treated, you know, if we're not being treated right. We have to recognize it, because when you grow up in a toxic home, you don't always know. You know, it didn't occur to me that if, you know, I was being blown off or ignored by somebody, that maybe that was mistreating me. It didn't occur to me, you know, unless they were physically beating me, I had no idea they were mistreating me. They could say the meanest thing in the world or the most dismissive thing, and I would just go, oh, because I didn't know better. That's a really good point that you made. The other reason I bring that up is because as I've gotten older, as I've evolved as a person, I have actually found myself going, what? Like becoming almost shocked, and like, because I've gotten to the place where I know what is okay and what's not. And it's like in me now. And mm-hmm. It's not like I'm going to act crazy and be mean to somebody who's disrespectful to me, but certainly, I mean, I kind of like to outclass them a lot of times. I like mm-hmm. to just be like, well, let me tell you, but, you know, but really like now it hits me like a feeling. Like I just know that's not okay. And it's something that happened with learning to like myself and learning to be okay with who I am without apology, without condition, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's where we all have to go. And I'm still, you know, I'm still growing on that scale. I'm still getting a little better every day. But when you get to that place where you can actually kind of respect yourself enough to go, I am valuable and I do deserve to be treated with love and respect. And that's true if you're alive, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Right on. Okay.
Yeah. But real quick about that, like backing that up to when we realized, you were saying, you know, growing up in a toxic home, and not only are our children who are raised in a toxic environment like that, not only are they not taught this, they're taught the exact opposite.
Yes.
Right. So if you're continually exposed to outrageously inappropriate behavior, but then you have this whole family system that's excusing it. Oh, well, you know what? Dad had a bad childhood, or mom was under a lot of stress, and you need to be more compassionate. You need to be more forgiving. Well, you know what? You only have one mother. And there's there's this avalanche of kind of well-intended bad advice that keeps people stuck. And this, we all get this well-intended bad advice from a wide mix of sources. And so it's really difficult to grow up in the world, it's not even like American culture, it's just the world, and have healthy boundaries, because this stuff's not taught. It's often developed after something horrific like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Oh boy. Now, wait a minute. I just had something a minute ago. I lost it. Oh, you got one for us.
I am scrolling up. AT had made a comment before. Hold on. There might be more to the situation. She said something about the narcissistic person in her life, you know, who was saying he was seeing people that weren't there, had said he was taking pills when he was younger, but refuses to now. She doesn't know his past medical history. And I'm seeing if she added any more to that. I'm scrolling up here.
I'm seeing a lot of upset. A lot of people say AT needs help at the end of the chat.
So I am too, but I'm not seeing any real elaboration. She says here, you know, is there someone I can get advice on from my specific situation? I'm so confused. You know, basically sounds like there might be some pretty major mental health stuff going on, but this person doesn't want to take pills. Here's the thing. This is really difficult. So if it goes back to what do you have control over? And if you can't make them take medication. Unless you're in a state where it can be court ordered, but even then, for it to be court ordered, they need to have some really outrageous, really problematic behavior to where it gets to that point. So then it kind of comes down to, okay, well, what are you going to do in this situation? Knowing that they don't see that they have a problem, they're not willing to change, and they're not willing to take medication. So then now what? What do you do in order to keep yourself safe and sane in all of this?
I mean, you have to, yeah. I'm trying to find her, there was, did you see her comment? Cause I can't seem to find it, but everybody seems really worried about this.
I know. I agree. I can't find anything outside of what I just mentioned either.
Okay. Can you guys please, somebody paste her comment, cause I'm missing it. I don't know if we can't scroll up to it or not far enough or.
Yeah. I guess the only thing Maddie was saying, if you ever feel threatened or in danger, please dial 911. So to add on to that, if you feel like there is a mental health crisis, that they are a potential danger to themselves or others, you can call 911 and have the police do a welfare check and just say, this is what's going on with this person. They're, you know, having hallucinations. They're acting in ways that are not normal. I'm really concerned about them. They won't go to the doctor. I'm concerned. Is there anything that you can do? And you might actually want to call the non-emergency police, but you can call the police regardless and see if it just depends. It depends. It depends on what state you're in. It depends on, and I'm assuming you're even in the United States. But I would start reaching out and getting some resources and then, yeah. You know, hopefully going from there. But,
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. We'll try to look. AT. I don't know the situation, but if you, I mean, I don't know the depth of it. But if there's anything else that we can do, please let us know in the chat, or feel free to send me an email, and I'll try to help in that way if I can. I don't know what. I'm not. I feel anxious because everybody seems worried. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, I guess until we figure that out, I had a good question from Maddie. Let me see if I can find it. Go ahead. Do you have one for us?
I have another kind of follow-up question from Zora Star, who says, in regards to the kind of controlling daughter-in-law, she says, well, should I say I'm glad you're with my son? I don't know if I'd go that far, but I'm
glad my son is happy with you.
You know. I would maybe just, you know, I want the best for you both.
Yeah. I mean, don't outright lie per se. Just try to keep it all positive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I love that you love him so much.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. Maddie says, can someone become addicted to the narcissist and their chaos, thus making it more difficult for the abused to leave? Oh, yes. Trauma bonding all day long. Yes. And more than that, I mean, I've talked before about the physical brain changes that happen, you know, your brain, like the pathways in your brain can literally change. And anyway, my point is It's the same as like addiction to cocaine. It's the same part of the brain that's affected. So, yes, absolutely, we can become addicted to the chaos. And I have videos on the chemistry of that, but I don't think it's relevant right now. It does make it harder to leave. And it's not like you're like, yay, chaos. It's like you're like, I'm scared. You know, I'm afraid to leave. I'm scared to leave. I think they can't function without me. I think I can't function without them. That kind of stuff. It's not like you're so happy about it. It's like you don't know what you would do if you weren't doing that kind of.
Yeah.
And when you do leave, you feel withdrawal. Dana, what do you think?
Yeah. And I think if a person's been in this kind of dynamic, if you grew up with it, or this has kind of been the pattern of relationships, it's very easy to confuse this, a lot of the intensity and chaos that comes with narcissistic people and just problematic people in general as love.
Yeah.
Because it feels the good times can be so good. They're so over the top. And it's really kind of them acting the part. They're acting the part of the ideal partner. They're trying to be over the top, but then the bad times are so bad. And then after we get out of this, every other relationship feels a little bit flat. Because it's like, boy, if you really care about me, you would love bomb me. You would be blowing up my phone, 20 texts, you know, an hour, and you're calling me and you're not letting me go. You're so persistent. Like that movie, Twilight, you know, with Edward the vampire, and he's stalking her basically. Everywhere she goes, he goes. She's all he thinks about. It's just this all consuming, intense, you are my world, this very immature understanding of love. But when we're groomed for that, when this has been really all we've experienced, it feels so real, because in part, this is what we do see on the movies and in music. But yeah, you know, if it's really true love, it's not going to push you to suicide or homicide or any of this. Like these are signs of an abusive relationship.
Yes, that is such a good point. And it is so interesting the way you see that story is not so unusual, you know, that the handsome stalker that falls in love with the princess or whatever. I mean, I know.
Or like when people fight, right? If you're used to, like, this is how you show that you care, right? It's that persistence and it's that control or jealousy, like, oh, you're not wearing that, or, you know, you belong to me, or who are you going out with, or continually calling, following you, checking your social media, this overinvestment in your life. If people are confusing, you know, controlling behavior for caring behavior, if they're confusing intensity for intimacy, if they're confusing love bombing for love, if they're confusing all of these things, then when you get in a relationship with a normal person, and let's say there's a disagreement, the normal person's not going to do that. They're not going to stalk you. They're not going to go to your house. They're not going to be texting you 20 times. They're just going to be like, okay, well, maybe we can talk tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that feels, it's like, well, wait a minute. No, if you really cared, you would be doing you would be acting crazy, because that's what we do. And then if you do something wrong, then I'm going to act all crazy.
Oh yeah.
And it's just this level of intensity, and that's not healthy. Pia Melody talks a lot about this. She has a book, Facing Love Addiction, and she talks about it from the perspective of the love addict, where if we're feeling this kind of crazed, intense, unhinged neediness towards another person, kind of these wounds that we need to work on healing, because feeling that way, it's problematic anyhow. But then if you've got somebody who's actively baiting you and provoking you and pushing your buttons, this is how these, and she even says it in her book, this is how these relationships turn homicidal. Because it becomes to this like fevered pitch, where if we've got attachment or abandonment issues that are unresolved, this other person's sometimes feeding those issues of being, oh, you've got unaddressed abandonment issues. And then they're like the perfect partner who, they want to see you, they want to spend time with you, they love you. It's like fish jumping in the boat. It's so much all at once. We're feeling so loved and complete, and then they pull that away.
Yeah.
And then we're in a scramble to get it back. Like, none of this is normal. And it all points to stuff, a lot of stuff that we need to resolve within ourselves in order to completely break the hold that these kinds of dynamics have over us.
Yeah. And I think it's really hard for people to admit to themselves, especially if it's a next relationship situation where this starts to happen, because they think, you know, okay, I've figured this out. Everything's going to be okay now. And then some, you know, they pull away, or some red flag type of thing happens, and they try to make exceptions for that person, like we kind of talked about earlier. And it's, you know, well, at least they're not hitting me. At least they're not this, or maybe because they had a bad day at work or whatever. And, you know, you can give them a one-time, okay, there's an exception pass. But if this happens, you know, excessively, or more, you know, more than once or twice over the course of several years, mm-hmm. a red flag. It's a thing to, you know, yeah, good point, Dana. Jamie Haynes says, how do you go no contact when you have kids? And I'll just tell you really quickly, because I've said this a lot, but no contact with kids is low contact. If you must be in contact with that person because of the children, then speak to them only about the children, only about the business of raising the children, pickups, drop-offs, doctor visits, school. Pretty much nothing else, unless it's related to a business type item that is not emotionally based. Don't talk to them about emotions. Don't share your emotions with them. And if they send you messages about anything outside of those things, we, you know, that you should talk to them about, don't respond. And use one of those apps. I've got a video called somewhere called seven apps for co-parenting with a narcissist, or parallel parenting or something. It is parallel parenting that you do with a narcissist. Yeah. Dana, thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, you don't have to be abused by them. Right. And there are things, like Angie was saying, these apps, there are third party, you know, mediators, people that you can go through. If they're being abusive in any communication, keep a paper trail, talk to your attorney about this, and just say, you know, yeah, all communication goes through these third party apps. We're going to start meeting at a neutral public place for drop offs. You know, we're meeting at Chuck E. Cheese, or we're meeting at, you know, Auntie Sarah's house. For whatever, however you're doing it, but you don't need to, it doesn't need to be like them coming over or them verbally, you know, assaulting you because of anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. I was trying to see if I could see anything else about AT here, but I'm not, let me see if I can, because before we, I know we're getting probably close-ish to our thing, but I didn't.
Well, here's a question while you're looking.
Go ahead.
For AT stuff. Spartan Phoenix says, when starting with a therapist, is there such thing as spilling too much too soon? I feel like I may burst into an embarrassing verbal vomit accompanied by tears.
That's a tough one. I don't think you could be spilling too much too soon, but I think you may want to make sure you choose the right therapist. Make sure you choose someone who has some experience with emotional abuse or trauma, things like that. Dana, thoughts on this?
Yeah, I would agree. That would be kind of the main reason I would kind of go slow in the beginning, because it is sometimes difficult to find a therapist who is a good fit. And so generally that first appointment is going to be an intake appointment. So you're going to answer a whole bunch of questions about your relationships, your family, the kind of the dynamic, so they can get an understanding of kind of what's going on. And then in the subsequent appointments, you're going to start getting more into your, you know, kind of presenting problem. So if when you call some different therapists, you might want to say, I was in an emotionally or psychologically, or whatever you feel would be the best term to describe your relationship, emotionally or psychologically abusive relationship. I would not use the term narcissistic abuse, because that's not a commonly known term. And even though they might say that they're familiar with narcissists or kind of antisocial personality disorders, or even emotional or psychological abuse, oftentimes their level of knowledge is not as comprehensive as it really needs to be honest. So sometimes it is kind of, you know, it takes a little bit to find one that you really gel with and who really knows their stuff and can help you. But you know what though, you can always go in and you can always just say exactly what you said of, I have so much going on inside me, and I really just need to spend the next 50 minutes of just unloading all of this. And I just need somebody to listen. And I'm so sorry, but I feel like I'm going to just do this verbal vomit and I'm going to break down in tears. And can you just please I guess, hold space for me for 15 minutes while I do that.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I know one of our people here is a therapist, Bible News Radio, who's in the chat right now. And so I typed in there for her because I didn't want to interrupt you to see if she had any tips for us on that, on other tips that we may not have thought of, because she's also a survivor. So I figure she might have an interesting perspective for us. Okay. So what about when, okay. So Steve Cox says, what about when the kids are initiating some of the narcissistic behavior? And I guess that's in regard to, I guess when the kids are being narcissistic, well, if they're still under 18, you're still under, you know, you still have a certain amount of control, sort of, in which case, you know, you can just not tolerate that behavior around you and you can point it out as narcissistic if you want to, or as disrespectful or whatever. There's going to be obviously limits to this. If you're dealing with teenagers, they're going to be kind of set in their ways. Somebody actually sent me, I don't even know who it was. Somebody sent me a recording that shocked me through email, where it was her husband and her daughter just tearing her apart. And I couldn't believe the things her daughter was saying. I would have been beaten to death if I said those things to my mother. Mm-hmm. But I think the best thing that, you know, you can do is just to point it out and tell them why it's wrong. I mean, and stop them if that's possible. I guess I would need to know more about the age of the kids and stuff like that. Dana, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's really difficult to regain control when they've gone this long without really having boundaries, or they've been able to get away with this kind of behavior. It's just really difficult. I think it's sort of like you got to pick and choose your battles.
Yeah, and don't react to things. Okay, I'm going to give it to you straight. Don't react to things that they do that are that type of behavior unless you absolutely have to. And if you don't give them any attention or any positive attention, but then whenever they do something good, positive attention. I know it sounds like training a dog, and it is a little bit, but it works. It helps anyway. It can.
Yeah.
But again, it depends on their age and how much, like, do you live in the same house as them? You know, things like that are also big, important things. Yeah. How much control you have over their environment. Go ahead.
And you can, you know, kind of get them where it hurts. So I think
the phone.
Yes, I was just going to say, you know, a lot of it with these kind of punishments, it's stuff that we can actually follow through on. So instead of being like, well, that's it, you're not going to go to prom. You know, if you really mean that, then say that. But if you don't mean that, if you're just using it as a scare tactic, if you can't back it up, then don't say it.
Good
but
point.
if you can say, you know what, here's the deal. In this house, I really want us to treat each other respectfully. I'll treat you with respect. I expect you to treat me with respect.
Yep.
This is what respect means. There's no name calling. There's no yelling. There's no belittling. There's no intimidation. Da, 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 da. If we do, we need to, as a family, figure out how we're going to stop doing this. And then make it very clear, if you guys do this, then you're going to lose phone privileges for the weekend or for a week, or you're just going to lose your phone altogether. Yeah. Like, nothing in here is a given.
Yeah.
I have the authority to take all of your technology away.
And that really works. I'm going to be real. Technology works, taking it away. But something else I want to throw in there, if they are below like age 10 or something, then I would focus also on teaching empathy, you know, on like having them sit with you and watch a movie. What do you think that kid feels like about that? Or what did that lady think when she saw that? You know, asking them to intentionally see and acknowledge the emotions of people outside themselves in an entertainment. TV is great for that, because, or even just walking in the park or whatever, but in a way that doesn't directly affect them, because then it teaches them to see without feeling like, oh, he or she is trying to do something to me to make me act a certain way. No, you're just asking questions. Well, you know, what do you think he thought when she smacked him in the face? Or how did it feel to him, do you think? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, little things. It does help. But once they're past age 10 or 11, just the other stuff.
Yeah. Because then, you know, you're dealing with hormones, and then there's already this huge sense of, you know, that kind of drive for teenage autonomy. And there's so many other, it's difficult. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it's really difficult.
For sure. Yeah.
Here's one from Claudia, who says, my ex is facing jail time and blames me. Why do I feel guilty? He didn't help with bills and always needed me for everything. Right now, he is basically homeless. Why do I feel responsible? He was evil.
So read the first sentence again, because
my ex is facing jail time and blames me.
Okay. You said ex, right? So yeah. I'm going to get real direct with you right now. Don't make this your problem. This is not your problem. You know that you were abused. You know that you went through what you went through. That's your ex. If he's basically homeless, if he's facing jail time, that's not your problem. And I'm sorry to say it's so like, oh, it's not your problem. It's not like that. But really, it's not your problem. You cannot allow yourself to continue. What happens when we get away from them is that the longer we're away, the more we forget how it felt to be abused by them. And that's why I always suggest writing it down, if you remember, writing down how you felt during the abuse, because that will remind you, you know, when you need to look back and stop feeling guilty or stop thinking about going back. If this person abused you and this person made your life toxic and they've done illegal things, that's on them. If they're almost homeless, that's on them. This is not something that you can allow yourself to feel guilty for. And then you can't allow yourself to dwell on it, because now it's time to focus on you. You spent however many years, you know, putting your life around that person, stopping your life for that person. And if you're now ready to move forward and have, you know, a healthy, happy, peaceful life, then you have to stop knowing about that person. So don't let people tell you that they're almost homeless. Don't let people tell you updates on that person. Try to explain to the people in your life, no, thank you, I don't want to know about these things. And if that person is still contacting you, make them stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if he's facing jail time, it's because of his behavior. It's not because of something that you did. Okay. Exactly. So his behavior is what put him in the jail, not anybody else. And this is the kind of the common thing that you'll hear from any abuser, anybody really that's done any type of crime, is that's not their fault. There's always some sort of reason as to why they acted the way they did. That's on them. Like, they don't understand, for whatever reason, they don't understand that they're responsible for their behavior. And sometimes jail does people good. And, you know, anybody in jail wouldn't agree with me on that, but you know, there needs to be that level of accountability for his behavior. And, you know, the fact that he's this whole pity party of, oh, he's homeless and he doesn't have any money, he doesn't have any food, he doesn't have any place to go. Okay. He's an adult. He needs to figure it out. You're not his mother. Yeah. So, this isn't on you. Like, he needs to figure it out. And I agree with Angie, cutting off contact. If this is really kind of pulling at your heartstrings, just cutting off contact. But I think with him or with anybody else, expect to get, texts and phone calls from burner phones and friend requests from people you don't know on Facebook and all of this, because they don't tend to let go lightly. If he's really manipulative, and it sounds like he is, he's going to continue with this, all of this guilt. But you don't have to feel guilty. If you have a solid understanding of what appropriate behavior is for an adult and what he's responsible for, all of that guilt that he's trying to push on you kind of falls away, because you can see it. You can see it for what it is. And it's like, well, no, nice try. I'm not accountable for you. I can't carry you through life. Like, right. You need to be able to stand on your own 2 feet. It's part of being an adult.
All true. Yes, absolutely.
And then Tobias is saying here with his wife, he says, it's very difficult to leave her. She's threatened suicide multiple times. I go back and the cycle repeats. I do not love her at all.
That's very difficult.
It is. But I think it's very much the same here. It's kind of realizing, what do we have control over? What do we not have control over? If she is going to self-harm, this is her choice. And if she's a danger to herself, all any of us can do is then call 911.
Yep.
And she'll learn real quick, either it is manipulative, in which case she'll learn very quickly that this is not a game that you're willing to play anymore. Mm-hmm. And if she's not being manipulative and she's serious, then she'll get the help that she needs.
Right.
But, right. You know, suicidal people, they need professionals to come in and handle that. And that's too, if this person is manipulative, if you have any inkling that they are serious, that they're really going to hurt themselves, these situations can escalate very quickly to also becoming homicidal. So this is why it's so important that you get the appropriate like first responders in that can hand that are trained to handle these situations and not try to handle it on your own.
And that is exactly that's almost exactly what I was about to say. When they threaten, you know, when you go no contact, when you leave, when they call you and they say, I'm going to do it. You say, well, I really hope you don't, but I'm going to call the authorities and they can help you because I can't, you know, or I'm going to call someone that can help you because you can't, you know, I need you to let me know that you're not going to do this because otherwise I'm going to call someone that will help you because I can't help you. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. Because you can't, they try to make you responsible, and that's some of them. And they play the victim and the damsel in distress. And 99% of the time, they're not going to do it. That 1% of the time they are going to do it, like Dana said, they need help and you can't do it.
And the reality is we have no control over another person's behavior. And if she were to self-harm or if she were to effectively complete suicide, that's her behavior. That's your choice. All any of us can do is to call 911 and try to get somebody help.
Yeah.
And so I just wouldn't own any of that. It's not fair. It's holding a person emotionally hostage.
Yeah.
And it's not fair. And it's too much responsibility for another person. Even if they weren't manipulative, even if they were a sincere person that's in crisis, you know, it would still be the same. Like, I can't have this. I can't carry this around with me. You need to get help, mm-hmm. You know, 911, please get the help that you need. But I don't want this on my back of always continually worrying about you and being responsible for your mental health. Like, that's just not going to work.
And I would say, I'm not qualified. I'm not, unless you are qualified specifically for that, you're not qualified. And that's what I tell people. I'm not qualified.
But you know what? Even if you are qualified, it's still personal. Holding a person emotionally hostage. Absolutely. And it's still not fair.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
He says the police have taken her to the hospital 2 or 3 different times. Wow.
Well, and it might need to be 2 or 3 more times, yeah. You know, if this is her cycle, and then there has to get to a point where you're like, you know what, if you're done, you're done.
Right.
And I really hope that you choose not to end your life. I really hope that you choose to get the help you need, but I can't do this anymore.
Right. And be that strong. And it sounds some people will be like, you're so heartless, but you're not. And don't let those people be in your life if they say that, because if they, you know, make sure that you are strong in your convictions and that you truly want to be, you know, don't let people guilt you into staying. She's been doing it for a long time. Bible News Radio says once people go through a 5150, most people won't do it again. And I guess that's when you call someone, you know, someone gets picked up for trying to, you know, commit suicide.
Yeah.
But she's probably right. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Angie, you bring up a good point. If you've got family or friends or whoever that's saying, oh, you know, she needs you. Well, gosh, you've been married to mom for 25 years. How can you leave her now? And, you know, she's not well and this, that, and the other. I'm literally saying, I have no control over her behavior. We've done this for 25 years. I can't prevent her from harming herself. All I can do is what any of us can do, and is to call 911. And I guess if you have an issue with it, then how about you give her your phone number so she can call you next time and just put it on them, right? Yeah. And I guarantee you, and of course, any reasonable person is going to be like, well, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Because it's not reasonable.
Right.
So it kind of shuts them up real quick. If you're like, well, then she can call you when she's in crisis. How about that?
Indeed. Yeah. And you know, Bible News Radio says, even if you were qualified, you're not being paid for them. So on the other side of that topic, it's not actually your responsibility, even if you are with them. But like Dana said, it's still holding you emotionally. I don't want to discount the truth of that, the emotionally hostage thing, but I had to throw that in there. LC said, shoot a video for yourself if you're in the middle of that, and save it and watch it later in case you ever attempted to go back. If you're still in it, that's a legitimate point. But again, that would make sure it's legal to record wherever you are and all that stuff. But if it's only for yourself, I don't think they can stop you. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, Spartan says, one call to the police and they won't make the claim again. In my case, the narcissist's brother went silent after I reported him for a suicide attempt. And he refused a psych evaluation, said my hands are clean. And I'm with you on that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's an important thing. Mo Cowboy, hello. And hi, Jen Archer, by the way, and hello to Bible News Radio, too. Said, sorry, Mrs. Ostrich, some toxic types do the shame thingy to the max, demanding more and more attention, blaming and shaming that you don't really care enough, leaving you totally drained. And so I just, that's kind of what we were talking about. You're totally right, though. Totally on point on that. I think we are way, way over, Dana.
Are we? I don't know.
Oh, just a few minutes over. Okay. But do we want to pick one more and wrap up, or?
Well, let me just elaborate on Missouri Cowboys
please do.
Comment here. And then if you want to pick another one or wrap okay. up or whatever you want to do. The whole blaming and shaming. Oh, you don't really care enough. I need you. I can only get sober if you're by my side. Nobody understands me like you do. I've never loved anybody like I love you. How can you leave me at a time like this? Aren't you supposed to forgive and forget? You're supposed to be a good Christian or Muslim or Jew or Buddhist or insert religion here. I need you to carry me, basically. And this is where it all goes back to what we were talking about earlier about getting really grounded in your reality and your boundaries.
Yeah.
So because our boundaries, and this is part of this kind of whole rediscovering ourselves and waking up period, where we start realizing, oh my gosh, our boundaries are being continually we're having to navigate them, and they're being continually pushed in hundreds of different ways, many of which we've never really noticed before. Mm-hmm. And so when you realize, you get in tune enough with yourself of like, okay, this is where the line is for my safety and my sanity. This is what I can do. This is what I can't do. Then all of this stuff, the shame, the blame, the guilt, the obligation, the pressure, all of this stuff, you see it for what it is. And it affects you. It puppeteers your behavior less and less because it just becomes a non-issue. And you see other people that are enabling of that as dysfunctional as they are. Because it's sort of like, okay, well, you can have your, my life's not a democracy. So like you can think that I should, stay with this person until they get sober, or that you think I should do X, Y, and Z. It doesn't matter to me because you're not me. You don't have to live with the consequences. I do.
Yep. Yep. All true.
Yeah.
All right. I found something from AT that I thought might be really helpful for us to answer before okay. we wrap up. She said, or he, I don't know. I feel bad for cutting off contact because I think he is mentally ill. This person that we were hearing about, the voices and the isolating mm-hmm. and things like that. And I just want to say this, if you did cut off contact, I'm very actually happy to hear that. I think that you have to, I understand that you feel bad because he's mentally ill, and that's totally normal up to a point, but his mental illness is not your responsibility, and it doesn't give him the right to abuse you, which I think that, if I understand you correctly, has been doing. And so in this case, I would ask you to focus on what you can control here. And that's things within your own self and your own environment, and do your best to, if you feel worried about him, you can always have him checked on, or have him, have family members let him, reach out to his family members or whatever, but it isn't your responsibility to take care of him and his mental illness, especially if he has abused you as part of that mental illness. I'm not sure that I think there's more going on than what we are experts in here. But ultimately your physical health and your mental health are of paramount importance. And I would love to hear Dana's thoughts on this.
Depending on the dynamic, I don't know if there was, what kind of abuse there was beforehand, if you feel that this person's potentially a danger to you, how open and honest you can be with them. But, you can always, if this would be appropriate for your situation, and you're the expert on your own life, so you'll have to decide that, but saying something like, we'll just call him John. John, I'm very concerned about you. You've been, kind of seeing these figures in the yard, and you've been exhibiting some behavior it's really concerning, and I want you to be happy and healthy. And I'm just concerned that there's more going on, and I want to be there to be able to support you. I want you to get help. I'm at a loss as to what to do, because if you don't want to go in to see the doctor, then I don't know how much longer I can handle this. And to just be very upfront, like, you really, if I'm going to stay around, we need to get you to the doctor. But again, this is only assuming that you don't think that they're going to become a danger to you. And it's hard. I mean, when I was a psychiatric nurse, we had a lot, it was heartbreaking. We had a lot of family members of people that were actively mentally ill, profoundly mentally ill. And they were in the exact same position. They're like, I don't know what to do. This person needs me. And, you know, depending on where you live in the world, you know, here in Michigan, we have community mental health services. So they have social workers, they have case managers, they have a whole treatment team. So there are resources available if family really for that. The whole point is to have that person have a level of independence and autonomy and a quality of life without them kind of being dependent upon others. So I don't know. It depends where you live, but it's okay to have your line in the sand and to say, and it's that way with anybody. If there's untreated mental illness, if there's alcoholism, if there's addiction, whatever, to just say, this is where my line ends. I love you. I want to be there, but this is sinking me too. Mm-hmm. And sometimes being that upfront can kind of be the catalyst they need to actually get in to treatment or get in to see the doctor. If they realize that you're not going to continue just to stay around and get dragged down too.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, there's a lot of interesting comments in here. Okay, so a couple things. First of all, AT added that he can't have any serious conversation. He just literally stops talking. And I think in that case, I mean, obviously he needs help. And so if you can't yourself commit him or get him to get help, then there's just not a lot you can do. But I think follow Dana's advice if that's an option. And then the other thing I wanted to say, Malta, thank you for being here and helping with all of that. There was another one. I'm sorry. Let me just try to find it really quick because it was something simple and quick that I could answer. I can't find it. Dang it. Okay.
Well, here's one from Mrs. Ostrich.
Okay.
Who says, can they outsmart therapists? Can they use therapy as a source of supply? And, you know, the answer is yes. And the reason being, you know, as if a therapist, anybody, any mental health professional that's alone, one-on-one in a room with them, all you can really do is you have nothing else to go off of other than what they're telling you. Yeah. So it's, of course, going to be very easy to kind of get taken for a ride because you don't, all you have to work off of is what they're telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Anyway. It's kind of a different story if it's couples counseling and you've got a therapist that can see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
But that's also assuming too, that the therapist is familiar with, you know, emotional and psychological abuse and that the partner who's being abused, it's hard. It's difficult when you're an outside person, you're seeing this and trying to sort out who's being abusive, who's being reactively abusive, because the target's going to come across as crazed and unhinged and like the unbalanced one. And the abuser is going to come across as the victim. Yeah. So it can be very difficult and it can take a little while to sort this out and see what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think and Chastine, boy, we could sit here and talk all day long, y'all. but we can't. I know I have an appointment starting in a few minutes. I'm not sure what Dana's got going on, but we have an hour usually that we have, and we've been here an hour and a half. So we're going to wrap up. But everybody, you can stay here and chat for, I think, 20 or 30 minutes after in the chat here. And I would love to see you all next week over on Dana's channel on Tuesday, same bat time, different bat channel. And again, Dana is at thriveafterabuse.com, thriveafterabuse on YouTube, Facebook, etc. And y'all know where to find me. So Dana, thank you again. This was awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for helping me stay on track because I know I was a little off track today. Happens. All right. And everybody, thank you for being here. Thanks for being a part of my day and a part of my life. Dana, see you next week.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Bye. All right. Let me find my thing. Okay. Bye.
Bye.